You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR 92.9 FM and translator K215GA 90.9 FM in Los Gatos, KMRT 101.9 FM in Santa Cruz, and new family member KVBE 91.1 FM in Portland. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a remote edition of Reset with Tanya. I am here at Half Moon Bay, very near Mavericks, where there are tricky waves, and we've had tricky weather this weekend as we have celebrated the end of a term for the Airstream Club International President, Eric McHenry. Yay! It's been a big love fest where everyone has celebrated what Eric stands for. Eric is he's a tech veteran turned community builder in an environment where that brings together so many different people who have a love of travel, adventure, experiences. And in my 4 or 5 years doing this, a ton of diversity within the cultures that are represented. You'll find tech retired CEOs, and you'll find people who grew up on farms.
Yeah.
All coming together. And I think that is what has made Eric remarkable in this journey, is that he has brought to bear, he brings together the resources and the people to do things with the community and for the community. So I am thrilled to have Eric McHenry today on Reset with Tanya from Half Moon Bay. It doesn't get much better.
It is gorgeous out here.
It is. Yeah, it is.
I did a bike ride up on the bluffs earlier today. And just to be able to relax and sit on the beach and read a book. It was absolutely. And to come back here with my friends, right?
I think there was a nap at some point. Yes. And you said earlier tonight, this isn't camping.
It's not actually camping. It's socializing, mm-hmm. It's community. We're outdoors. We have that sort of, the people call it the wanderlust. You want to move, and we're not going to, next time I see you, I don't know where it'll be. It won't be in Half Moon Bay.
No, I think it's going to be down near Los Angeles.
It may be, yeah. I remember the last time I saw you.
But it is community.
Lake Tahoe.
It was probably in Tahoe.
That's the magic, right? You bump into people, and it may have been a year or 5 years or 2 weeks, and it's, where else can I get this?
Yeah, yeah. And this community, I say, is family. A lot of people here are a little older. They have a little more flexibility with their time. And for the people who have children, those children have moved on into their adult lives. And so people are, I think, really tight in the Airstream community because it's their new version of family that they don't have to put up with every day and wash laundry for. They get to show up at beautiful places like Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, sort of family. It's sort of neighbors back in our parents' generation. And you knew your neighbors. You go 2 blocks away to Bobby's house, and Bobby's mom cooks you dinner. You stay overnight. It's a little bit of neighbors.
Yep.
It's a little bit of family. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of travel to different places experiencing together.
I love it. I love it. So you are just now retired from this role.
It's funny.
What word do you use?
My term is over.
His term as international president is over.
Yeah.
We are grieving that on our West Coast side of the international region, if you will. But before your 3 years at the helm of ACI, you had two robust careers.
At least. I work in a bike shop. I used to race bikes when I was a kid.
So then you had three robust careers.
Yes.
But you spent 25 years at Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
Left Hewlett-Packard as a general manager of a division.
Yes.
And I think by then it was Agilent.
Yeah, vice president, general manager. Yeah, we had a nice size business, half international, domestic.
Love it.
Classic, yeah.
So you were there 25 years, and then you did 17 as the CIO of the city of Santa Rosa. Santa Rosa is wine country up here.
Yeah.
So what, an hour and a half north of the Bay Area?
That's correct.
Yeah. That's home for you when you're not out traveling, because you travel quite extensively.
Yes.
So you had these two really long-term careers.
Yeah.
This podcast is about transitions and resets. Mm-hmm. It's about, and it's trying to normalize that we all transition and change things. And normally when we change, life gets better, and change shouldn't be feared, ideally.
Yes.
So what helped you understand, for both Hewlett-Packard and then for the city of Santa Rosa, when did you start to feel and know? What gave you the signal that it was time to move on?
It was a long time with Hewlett-Packard. And I started in Silicon Valley, and we joke about it. We said, when the gods still walk the earth, because Hewlett and Packard would walk through the lab.
Yes.
You walk up to your workbench. And I was electrical engineer, computer science background, soldering and doing firmware and code and stuff. And it felt like a family. Back in the days of the 80s, it was a family. And you thought you worked there forever. And back in those days, Hewlett Packard, we owned the markets in which we participated in.
Yeah.
A product lifecycle would go for 7 to 10 years.
You were the Google of the day.
We were the Google of the day. And it brought a wonderful group of people from around the world as mm-hmm. to work with. It's where I learned, by the way, that one of the funnest things in life is to work with people that are smarter than you.
Yeah.
It builds into, it prevents it to hubris. Mm-hmm. I remember mm-hmm. that, I think it was President Barack Obama a long time ago said that he realized when he became president that on any given topic, there was someone else in the room that knew more about that topic than he did. And the goal is how do you get that input and that feedback into you? And so we did really well at Hewlett Packard. I loved it there. I did well professionally with friends. But there came a time where it felt like I needed to do something more connected to my community. My wife would always somewhat joke that I knew my home. I knew SFO.
Yes.
And I knew Hewlett Packard. So where do my kids go to school? Yeah, no, mm-hmm. I felt like something was missing in my mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. While the products we developed, it might be a stretch to say they changed people's lives, but they were phenomenal products. They didn't really have any impact on the people around whom I lived, the neighbor mm-hmm. community. And I thought, I love it to do something that it matters where I live. And I think, Tanya, that's something that people come to often in their careers at certain ages, I think. Like, I know that I never would have come to that conclusion when I was 20. And even when I was 30 and climbing the corporate ladder.
I think you're chasing different things in your 20s and 30s. And then you chase something different when you're in your 40s.
You do. And if you're lucky, you mm-hmm. understand when it's time to change.
Yeah.
And you change to something, transition to something mm-hmm. that sort of the next wave in your life. Yep. A number of friends of mine that were male, that in that time frame, they had reached a certain level of professional objectives. Mm-hmm. They were the general manager. They were the vice president. And it's, okay, now what? I got here all my life. It's not fully and rewarding to me anymore.
Yeah.
So now what? And I was really fortunate to be kayaking up in the Sierras, mm-hmm. a really good friend of mine. And he said, Eric, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And I was probably in my 50s then.
Okay. What are you going to do with the rest of your life? What kind of kayaking conversation is that?
He's a neighbor.
Yeah.
A little wide, right. Probably also.
Right.
And when you're in a boat, in a small boat, and he's in a small boat, the world becomes very small and focused.
Yeah.
And the water's calm. I have a lovely kayak. He's mm-hmm. a row crew at MIT. And I just love being on a fast boat on a nice, calm lake.
Okay.
And the serenity. And I said, mm-hmm. I don't know. And he says, what about working for a public sector? I was like, no, I can't imagine working for the government. And he talked to me some more, and I trusted him. And he said,
yeah, of course.
The city at the time, one of the hurdles they had was building out technology infrastructure mm-hmm. for process mm-hmm. improvement internally, operational efficiency, but also more importantly, for citizen-facing technology. You didn't have this back then, right? Mm-hmm. You talk to the city council, you called up someone,
right.
And open government didn't exist.
Okay.
He said, Eric, you have the opportunity, the background, the skills to help out locally. And there happens mm-hmm. to be some openings coming up that, and so that blah, blah, blah happened. And it was one of the best decisions.
So that's what took you into the CIO role.
That's right.
At Santa Rosa.
That's right.
How amazing. And I'm guessing this is around 2005 or so.
It must be around 2005. Yeah, about, right. Because I left at about 2024, 2023.
Yeah, yeah. Which would have been an amazing time in local government.
It was an amazing time.
Because then they were starting to actually fund to do things to catch up with what people, with what their consumers expected.
They knew it by then.
Yeah.
Because at some point, if you're too early moving into a new,
right.
a large organization, mm-hmm. they don't view that as mission critical, they view that as willing to fund.
Yeah.
That it can be really frustrating. And I was fortunate to work with a wonderful city manager and chief financial officer at the time and let me do what I do well.
So you felt the calling for meaning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved. Yeah.
And that never stopped. No.
Never stopped. Never stopped.
So it occurs to me as I work through these dates with you, I think I saw an article somewhere, your Airstream journey started around 2010.
Yes. This will be 15 years in the club because we get our third star. I don't know this, but in our Airstream club, it's kind of like Boy Scouts in some ways. Let's start with Scouts. But it's about rewarding people for accomplishments. Uh-huh. And so every 5 years, a member has been in the club, we get an extra little star we can choose to put up on our
I haven't earned a star yet.
Oh, he'll be soon.
Help me soon. I didn't know about this.
And I used to joke, but one time I ran into a gentleman and he probably had 10 or 12 stars on his trip.
Oh, my.
I would write up to him to talk to him. Yeah. You would have too.
Okay.
Because you know someone that has been around the travel that he must have done.
The stories they've been part of. The
story. Almost nicest man. Nicest man. And we talked for hours. Yeah. So anyway, so about 15 years in the club.
So what was it like in 2010 walking into your first gathering rally? You and Laverne, and you, I think you maybe had outdoor things that you were doing as a family.
Yeah.
But you, I think I saw Laverne quoted as saying you graduated up to an adult trailer. Is that what she called? Because people who drive, who tow Airstreams are fanatical about the brand.
Yeah, they are.
But she said that you needed to graduate up to an adult trailer.
Like a lot of people, we started off car camping, backpacking, kayak camping.
Still had a family at home.
A family, right? Mm-hmm. We had a tent trailer. We loved it. We were camping a lot. But Laverne grew up in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So her version of camping is going out two blocks to the beach and putting out a blanket, having a good time. Mine in Seattle was you go up in the Cascades and you dig a trench around your tent and try to stay dry.
Yes.
With your wool clothing.
Yes. Yes. Love it.
And so we started in the club, but Tanya, the club was it was a very different place back then. You know, my wife she's half Japanese and Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Looks Hawaiian.
Yeah, you're just talking about physical attributes.
I'm obviously African-American.
So Laverne, we'll say, looks like a Hawaiian woman.
I'm obviously African-American.
And you're an African-American man.
The demographic of people in our club is not that. Yeah. It's mainly Caucasian, white. It's mainly older. Mm-hmm. And we came in a time where we didn't see ourselves.
The world was in a different time.
Yeah, but we didn't. But more importantly, we didn't see ourselves. Mm-hmm. We didn't see anyone around that sort of reminded us of our friends. And it made us concerned at first. Mm-hmm. If you join a club, you're doing it to join a group, probably.
Yes. And you're going to invest time in that group and you want to be comfortable. Right.
And I learned from that that my misconceptions were huge because it's just a wonderful group of people, but they didn't. It didn't look like a group that we'd ever been part of. Fortunately, when we were purchasing our trailer, a gentleman came up, apparently he's Chinese. He says, oh, I'm in the Airstream Club. And he told us all about it. He's like a nice guy. He lived in the Bay Area. He said, it's a great place, great people. Come to an event. And we came to an event. And after that, we just were all in.
So here you are, a person that looks different from the average demographic.
Correct.
You look different in your appearance, in your marriage, all these things.
Yeah.
And then you began leading. You didn't just attend. You got so involved that you were, I'm assuming pretty soon, in club leadership.
Yeah.
What was it like to lead an organization where everyone had a very different life than yours, or had at least different experiences in their history?
So I had a benefit because for most of my professional life, I have been a senior manager. Mm-hmm. So I have been in those positions, and Laverne in those with me as being the senior person over a large organization, another person of color often. We look younger than we are. So we're a little more accustomed to that.
Yeah. You've been the only.
Yeah.
So much so that it's your own person. For me, I've been the only for a lot of my career. And it was just my standard. If I came into the room and there was another woman in the room, I didn't know my place because my place was very well carved out as the only woman in the room for a long time.
I think our community, our United States, California was ready for, our club was ready for it at that time.
Yeah.
We didn't know it for sure, but one of the markers of that was when Laverne and I, so the first major role you have was third vice president in the international club, then second and first, right? We were brought in as third vice president. It was at a big event. We had a standing ovation. No one else did. And I,
so it was embraced.
And I choose to believe that was because the club says, finally.
Saw it as a
This is another
moment.
Sign that our club is opening up. Mm-hmm. We're more inclusive. Gosh, to have an African-American man. And before me was the first openly gay person to lead our club.
Before you?
Yeah, the president before me. Before that was the first female to ever lead our club in 70 years.
Okay.
And so our club, I think, started to see that we are inclusive. We're moving to a place where I think a lot of people want to be, where race doesn't matter. It's your character, it's your capacity to lead, your judgment, right? And so that was really helpful for us to see that. And I think that to see that at our first major introduction to the club was incredible power, really powerful.
Yeah.
Because as you go around the country, you meet people and, you know, they are people. Some are reserved, some are open, distrustful. Some are, oh my gosh, you guys are, the word woke wasn't used back then.
Yeah.
But you're a bunch of woke Western, West Coast people. That's how they perceived us because they don't know any better. So it was really nice to see that warm and welcoming induction to the club.
You are completely authentic.
Yes.
With everything that you are. And you're a role model. It's a lot to carry.
I know that.
Because you are, I've never seen you as recruiting for people who are married to Hawaiian-looking women. But I think you know that just when you show up and people go, oh, it's not what I expected.
That's right.
It's an opportunity. We hear that
all the time. And it's usually from the people that have been disenfranchised, that are the minority, or racial or sexual preference or gender. And they would come to us, often privately, and say, I was so glad to see you guys there because it made me feel like, because I'm XXX, I could fit into.
Yeah. And but it was okay for me to be different.
But the other thing that we did, I'm very proud of, and Laverne was instrumental in helping this go through also, is that our club has a bunch of, we call them intra clubs. And that's, if you're in a ham radio or amateur radio.
And what is it? Grains and?
Vintage, grapes and grains.
Grapes and grains.
Right? So back in those days, when we first came into leadership, probably 5 years ago, we didn't have that many. Mm-hmm. And Laverne and I personally helped start and promote single women towers, women that towed by themselves, LGBTQ plus club, because that's really important. And when people see that, they see that it's been approved by the International Board of Trustees, but then it's all talk about it. I'm not one to be shy on this. Yeah. I talk about the fact that we are inclusive, our club is. Mm-hmm. And here's some examples of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to talk the walk, not just walk the talk.
Right.
What also helped, Tanya, was that Airstream Inc., people that make our lovely trailers, when they look at their clients, the people buying their trailers or their motorhomes, it's a very diverse set of people. They may not be in our club, but they're younger, they're more diverse. And their Airstream is making some rigs that are lower cost, entry level ones, right? Their point, and they told me this, their CEO and their marketing director, is that, look, this are our demographics. If we partner with you, we want you to be welcoming to those parts if you're not the people for us to recommend to. So synergy helped a lot, that it was reinforced not just by some of the other people in our club, but also by our key, the manufacturer.
I think that's a retention play.
It is.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's, they were progressive enough to see if this demographic in purchases was broadening and diversifying, the club had to mirror those values.
Yes.
Because people, not me, but other people, their streams tend to graduate. They'll start out with a 16 footer and then they go to a 20 and then they have kids and they might pop to a 30, but people graduate in their Airstreams in terms of size and accommodating families.
Well, it's also the brand stickiness too. So I was at Airstream every year puts on a meeting for their dealer network, which are the general managers, owners, or other dealers, right? So we got invited to go for the first time 3 years ago. And I helped present to the general managers. But one of the key messages that Airstream, their CEO and their chief marketing officer said, and their sales, VP sales, was that we want brand stickiness. And the number one thing that we've identified that keeps people buying Airstream over and over again is there's something that they lose if they don't buy it. And
say that a different
way. The number one thing is that love the trailers, but they understand that if they go to some other brand, they will lose this community they've built up.
100%.
And so
I would probably give up my home before I would give up my Airstream because this represents to me my extended family.
It's your extended family. And you give that up if you leave the brand.
That's right.
And it's not a cynical way of looking at things. It's what people want. And they realize the thing that can help them with that brand stickiness club that provides value to their customers. And we are in a position to do that.
I love it. There are very few brands, as I can think of it, that have accomplished the creation of such a tight community. I bought an Airstream because it seemed like the thing I wanted to buy. I didn't know there was a community.
Most people don't.
And then, but now that I do, there's just no way I would ever have any other nature experience other than this one.
That's right. Right? That's right. And if you look at the Airstream ads, I call aspirational ads.
Yeah, they are the ideal life.
You're with your friends or your family, and you just had in a creek or a lake, right? Some of you are with a bunch of people gathering around and going on a tour of New Orleans or camping in some place up in Yellowstone together as a group. So it's all those things. And I think that people want choices. Like Laverne and I, we love to go up into Bureau Land Management, BLM land, be alone, or go to Death Valley and hang out. There's the two of us.
That means not an organized experience. Yes, not a campground, not plug in power, sewer, cable. That means like you're just on the land.
Yeah, one of our favorite items, we were in Arkansas for the solar eclipse about a year ago. And we were in some dude's hayfield in the middle of nowhere. And there's about 40 Airstreams in a circle, just off-grid camping for about 5 or 6 nights. And one of those was the eclipse. And it was just such a magical day.
Yeah. And memories.
Yeah.
Memories. I don't know of many places where you can expect that you're going to have experiences you're still talking about 2 years later, that you count as like milestones in life.
And we remember the people that were there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like when you pulled into this rally. And there were 35 or so trailers here to celebrate the end of your term.
Yeah.
Friends and family level people all cheering. There was a drone in the sky. The only thing we didn't have was a drone laser show spelling out Eric McKinney guy. But it was wonderful.
I think about it as repatriation.
In my career,
Hewlett Packard,
yes.
I did a Foreign Service employee assignment. Mm-hmm. 2 years abroad.
Where'd you go? I didn't know this. That doesn't count.
You tell a Canadian that?
I would not, under the current climate. That would not be my intention.
It was abroad. Okay. And it worked out well for us. But the problem is, when you do that, you step out of your local management chain and the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And so when you come back to the States, there's a process called repatriation. So how do you fit you back into where you came from? And that's what this was about for me. Maybe not for y'all, but for me, it was like, we've been gone. We've been on the road for 6 to 7 months out of the year for the last 3 years. And a lot of people here at this local club were used to be our local family. We don't even know. We see them once or twice. And it's how do we fit back in?
Yep.
And this was a wonderful sort of open arms.
You're back. Welcome home.
We're still here. There's new people here also. We're looking forward to you to rejoining our local family.
I love it.
So that's what it was for me.
I love it. I'm not quite done talking about your leadership, though.
Let's go.
And it's the resets that we have and that we explore in life. And you transitioned from tech corporate to local government, dramatic improvements. Yeah. Still tech, but what you were doing really was changing people's lives in terms of how they were serviced by a very important community here. And then you began to manage a largely volunteer community.
Yes.
Right? And manage is not, that didn't feel right.
Airstream Club.
Airstream Club.
Yeah.
So what skills do you think, or experiences from your more work experience, translated because you talked beautifully about the kayak moment.
Yeah.
Where you understood that doing something for local government, using the skills you had, would be meaningful. You were looking for meaning.
Yes.
You pulled technical skills into meaning. So when you transitioned into the Airstream role, what were you pulling forward into that?
I'd say, ironically, the part that most was my public sector, it turns out, background. Because if they're working for a city, so there's 200,000 employees, and they don't really know who the mayor is. They don't care who the mayor is. They're sitting out somewhere. All they care about is the lights go on, their utility bills are reasonable, their streets are clean, and there's no high-rise built next to them.
Yeah.
I'm simplifying a lot.
Yeah.
But they're disengaged. They view public government as to be in the background to make their life as a citizen work well. And you think about the Airstream Club. People join us because they want to just have fun. They want to go to a nice rig, time. That's all they care about, by and large. Well, I think that our job as leaders of an organization is to understand that these are somewhat disconnected people from the leadership. They just want to have fun. We call it the camping club. So that awareness was really important to me. And I say that because I worked with some people in leadership in our club that thought that they would have a level of importance to other people. So now, these people that are in our club, they have a wide background, a lot of very successful in their own means. They view you as someone to help them out. They're thankful you're helping, but you're just helping out. And so there isn't this sense, I'd say, of entitlement from a leader. It shouldn't be there because we're serving them. We're serving our members.
When it's going
and that's
well.
What public service, serving your community.
Yep.
And so I pulled more from in the private sector, particularly in high tech, we move fast, we're nimble.
Yeah.
We hopefully, if we do our job, we anticipate the needs of our customers. We understand mm-hmm. that customers have choices where mm-hmm. to go. In the public sector, you have more of an audience that probably isn't going to move because the water mm-hmm. bill up too high. So you right. have to think about life a little bit differently with them. Mm-hmm. A bit of more of a long-term play too.
Yep.
And so that kind of that nuance. And the other thing that we found in the, what I found coming into the Airstream Club from a leadership standpoint is that we may hear from a couple of people that are very upset about a certain issue. We have 18,000 members. And if you have never had feedback from a few people before, you think that the two people may reflect the majority of the population. Mm-hmm. That almost is never the case.
Yeah.
In the public sector, you realize that because mm-hmm. you have city yes. council meetings, mm-hmm. you have people come down tensioned. And so to just to balance the fact that I'm hearing from these few people, and while their input is important, it may not be the quiet majority.
Yeah.
It's a, how do you manage and govern and come up with policies, mm-hmm. programs that hit the majority of your members who are yep. quiet, and they will vote with their feet because if they don't like
that's
what
right.
they see mm-hmm. for the membership dollars, they're going to call you up. They're going to leave.
Yeah.
So that whole understanding of that has been very helpful to me, I think.
I love it. I'll go back to your story about the gentleman who had 5 or 10 stars.
Yeah.
So with what you've done a complete rebrand.
Yes.
On ACI. You've redesigned not just the website, but how it serves people. And that's your technical leanings that yes. helped you do some of those things. But you had to really balance tradition
yes.
with innovation.
That's right.
Okay. And sometimes it's not about what you deliver, but it's about what you change.
Yes.
This magazine has been a hot point of contention at times. I think you guys went to fewer, this is a silly story, but you went to fewer episodes, fewer printed versions. And I was at one of my first rallies and people were up in arms that they weren't getting a monthly beautiful publication, that it was online digitally.
Yes.
And so that's my example of it. It does matter when you pull these communities forward. How did you go about understanding how to move a community into better efficiency, because it is a big business with 18,000 people, but it also, you know, there's ways that we serve, you and I are tech forward.
Yes.
But we know we serve people better if we can just get them to give an inch
I shouldn't say that's an easy answer, but it is in my mind, at least. Again, Hewlett Packard, right?
Yep.
He started the idea of management by walking around in BWA. That was a key thing in Silicon mm-hmm. Valley. Became very aware with Hewlett Packard. They'd walk around to your office as managers, you walk around. And so Laverne and I, we spent 3 years, 7 months out of a year, going around the country, sitting in discussions like this, mm-hmm. campfires, mm-hmm. talking to people. And we started to build this appreciation, but also understanding of what's really important to them.
Yeah.
And you could tell really quickly that most of the people, they already got most of their publications digitally. Most of them. And they got a magazine. It wasn't as much for information every month. It was almost, I think Laverne coined it, a coffee table book. So you thumb through it.
I usually have these out on my table outside.
And you thumb through it and you look at it. True. But it isn't where you get your primary source anymore. And once we realized that, we said, look, let's take the old Blue Beret magazine, make it a lot prettier, a lot more aesthetically interesting.
Got it.
And assume that people will see this every 3 months or so. And then we'll build up also a really strong marketing. So we brought on, first time ever, a marketing person into the headquarters office. Mm-hmm. And we brought on a consultant to help us with our marketing collateral.
Good.
We built up our social media stuff. We worked with some automation in our social mm-hmm. media, MailChimp type deliveries. Mm-hmm. And so now you have this, but this is just a reference book. I like looking at it nowadays. But again, if I want to find out anything that's going on, we put on 800 events a year, our club mm-hmm. to our website, and we have an app. Everyone has it.
And you can get to what you need. With that kind of scale, it no longer made sense to have this
right.
book.
And so people would mm-hmm. sometimes say, if you're tech, you're young. I said, look, there's a lady, I won't share her name. She's one of our members that we met in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And she wrote me a really nice letter. And we were driving near her town, and we said, let's pop by and visit. She must have been 90. And I asked her about this. She goes, get all my stuff online.
90.
I'm on Facebook.
I went.
So I love the Blue Beret. I've been to the club for 30 years. Mm-hmm. No, I get all my stuff online. And so I would tell people that story. Is, you know, something.
Don't you can do it.
Because you think that someone in 70s or 60s once says, don't assume anymore. What other bills do they do online? Do they do in paper? No one writes checks anymore. Let's get rid of checks. Let's do everything online. And so if you tell people those stories enough and enough, you still get the people pushing back, but this is a small subset. And you know that you have to move forward and be where your customers are. Your members are old. You become antiquated. And so that helped a lot. And I think it's also, I call it leadership courage also. At some point I have to say, I think this is the right thing. I think this is what we want, we should do. Mm-hmm. You don't get it right all the time, by the way. But that's okay too.
I like to think, you're absolutely right. You don't get it right all the time. But as leaders and as servant leaders, we don't have a choice but to always be trying to make it better.
Yes.
And so sometimes that does cause wrinkles in the system that people grow and learn from.
Yes.
And I would say that there have been a lot of things that have happened just in my 5 years with the club that represent that growth, represent that it's a little bit of churn, it's a little bit of question, introducing lotteries for rallies, things that are really contentious. Do I get to go to Albuquerque or not? There's just different ways we've chosen to handle things as we scale. But you have to keep iterating on it to find what the rhythm is that works for the most people.
So we have a 21-person board
okay.
in the Airstream Club. It's 12 regional, if you will, and then 9
at large okay.
executive council. And so the presidents, their responsibility is to understand their constituents. They understand sort of California, Nevada, Texas, and Oklahoma, blah, 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 Florida. You know, they understand, and there are regional differences.
Yeah. They're absolutely.
Their job is to understand that. The executive council's job is to look holistically across the whole, say, okay, what are some partners or initiatives? Mm-hmm. Let's get some feedback from the regional presidents. Mm-hmm. Let's fine tune them a bit. And then we roll it out together. So we do have that localized responsibility. And they're very
representation
on the board. And that's something else I'm really proud that we did is that the used to be that board wasn't very active. And now they're very active. Sometimes it gave me more gray hair than I wanted.
I understand that.
But that's the reality of working with a board that is involved.
But it brought that representation into the board.
You have to have it.
So that, and this is to me like the listening tour that you did.
Yes.
When you first started and you, whether you knew it was a listening tour or not, it was your ethos. It was how you deliver and operate.
That's right.
And from that you learned and had insights and then had leverage and influence. Eventually, I don't know that was your design. I have never felt like you wanted to let grow up and be ACI president. That was not just evolved
but
through.
But you want to be successful in any job that you do. And to do that, you have to have that collaboration. You have to have the trusted people that can call you, but Eric, this is a stupid mistake. Mm-hmm. And you have to have sort of the confidence of the members. I met this guy, I met his wife. He's like a great guy. I think he's on some good ideas. I'm not sure everything, but I'll give him a try.
So what has been your biggest challenge in bringing together, because I would characterize the 18,000 group as being diverse, but also very passionate.
Yes.
About what they hold on to.
Yeah.
So what was the biggest challenge in working with those dyed-in-the-wool must-dos, as you naturally are a change maker?
So one of the comments that, and I'll tell you a little story about this one. So we started this thing. Laverne and I did with the corporate manager, Lori, when I first started 3 years ago, and we call them the campfire chats.
Okay.
A lot of companies would do this. They do quarterly or whatever meetings, all employee meetings.
Now, 3 years ago, this was in the middle of COVID, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, yeah. It's already right? And so we started these quarterly campfire chats, and it was a way where I got on for an hour, once for the East Coast and one for the West Coast timing, to say, hey, no real agenda. Ask anything you want. I'll answer any questions. Give us your feedback. And that was hugely important, because what it signaled was that approachable, wanting to listen.
Right.
In one of those, I got the question, why do you talk so much about the growth of the club?
Oh,
growth of the numbers.
But that's a very telling question.
It is.
Yes. Keep going.
And I said, the opposite of growth is stagnation. And we don't want that. If we can, a lot of other social clubs around the world, be they Kiwanis or Scouts or the bowling leagues or whatever, they have gone down. And I said, so if we don't grow, we will have an aging membership. And at some point, we're going to go away. But we have to mm-hmm. pay attention not just to the needs of our legacy members yep. that have been in for 10 or 12 years, yep. but also the 0 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest challenge in our club. Because rightly, if you've been in the club and it's your family for 5 years, 10 years, you may not want to change some things. And why should the new people cater to them? And I'm serious. These are really...
Yeah, understood.
These are sort of family neighborhood type. Mm-hmm. That was my biggest challenge. How much do you...
Force
push.
Change on the kids are working because it's working.
Is it a metaphor or analogy where you're trying to push a kid on a swing and you can only push at a certain rate to make them go higher? If you try to push too fast, it's like, bam, you mm-hmm. push hard enough, the kid doesn't go anywhere.
You did that with your kids, huh?
No.
Got to push it.
But for an organizational mm-hmm. step, mm-hmm. there's a sweet spot of knowing pushing a little bit harder than maybe you think, but not too hard and scaling back sometimes. And that's a lesson that I have a hard time with because I'm can be somewhat impatient also. Yeah.
That's my biggest challenge as a leader.
But that's leaders.
Want everything moving fast. Some organizations are not ready to move fast.
And the other one, mm-hmm. organizational change, they say, hey, the CEO, Agile at the time, he told me that if you look at organizational change, it was 1/3, 1/3, 1/3, right? A third mm-hmm. of the people like, yeah, let's go do that. The third of the other end are like, no. But there's this third in the middle that are, I don't know, it might be okay.
Might be. What's
so
the climate?
Those are the people you focus on.
Okay.
If you focus on the 1/3 like this, you're not going to get anything done. You want to focus on the 1/3 that's going to do it, but really the people in the middle, because they're going to get
They're
some
already
really good
committed.
Questions.
They're change
It's
positive.
The people in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have really good mm-hmm. questions and really good concerns. And if you can get them on board,
I love it.
Then the organization, by and large, will move along. And so that's a part of the thing we did also. We started to do some initiatives with clubs that we knew were ready to try more off-grid camping. Or do some special events that were highly curated, perhaps mm-hmm. more expensive in addition mm-hmm. to the off-grid events.
Oh, here's an example of how progressive, and that's not the right word, but we just did a cruise. We're Airstreamers. We are RV trailer people. Yeah. And I didn't go, but it was an Alaska cruise. And people are talking about it here. Several people here went and have spoken about, because it's community now, right? So trying out those experiments, if you will.
That's right.
Led to... People evolve because Jason, I think, is the one who spearheaded the cruise.
Yeah.
And so people rise in their interest levels and begin to lead with you to carry things forward that are of interest to them. And that's what you want in a club this size.
So how wonderful is it, right, to be able to work in that space? You can try innovations.
Yes.
You're not backpedaling or have a financial crisis or a personnel crisis. And when those things happen, you can't really do anything. But so we're really fortunate. I also focused on getting our financials, becoming a finance director on board, that now we look at P&L, cash flow, report all of that. I would argue most of our members don't care, but we have a solid financial underpinning now. Yeah. We have a good financial planning now. We have infrastructure.
Foundational.
So because that's in place, you can start to work on, you got some move and play around on any different thing. And that's where I think people really want us to be.
Yeah.
We're looking on services that help them get the value out of their membership. So, anyway.
I love it.
You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR 92.9 FM and Translator K215GA 90.9 FM in Los Gatos, KMRT 101.9 FM in Santa Cruz, and new family member KVBE 91.1 FM in Portland.
So what's beyond Airstream for you? Because this is just a chapter. You may look 40. Look at that camera. You may look 40, but you're not. You're
on last year where he left off. So I'm thinking that that's okay.
You do. Personality and look. Do you play basketball?
I do not.
Okay. Then you're not quite Barack Obama.
I'm not. Tanya, so my interest right now is local.
It's still impact-driven.
It's impact-driven. Cool. I am still the board president for a local observatory, John Wilkes Observatory, Robert Ferguson Observatory, because I care a lot about STEM. I care a lot about women engineering, people of color engineering, low to moderate income, disenfranchised people engineering and sciences. And there's something about getting people out under the stars that haven't done it. And who knows?
Just like this.
That spark that they get from... Oh, wait a minute. I don't understand why the North Star stays there because the Earth spins and it doesn't to the pole, blah, blah, blah. I get it. And they start to ask these questions. And when kids are asking questions of celestial mechanics, It's okay. That's a great start. And they get to have confidence in asking questions. And so we bring also young adults in to help out as volunteers. And there's one lady, I won't say her name, but she, when she first came to the observatory, she was so shy, and she was in her second year in high school. She was so shy, she would sit in the corner. And now you watch her a year later, and she's up on there talking about the constellations, getting her laser pointer out, talking about all this stuff. She's studying in double stars. And it's like, wow, that is
really
cool.
We planted the seed.
We planted the seed. So that, I'm also really interested in wildfire mitigation, because we live in Sonoma County, and we had a tremendous number of horrible wildfires. There are some groups now that are working on trying to ensure it doesn't happen again. There's watershed protection preservation. We have a lot of people, where we live, we're in Sonoma County, and it's actually agriculture. And some of these farms go under, or their kids don't want to run it. There's a choice of selling their land to a developer, or in trying it into a public trust. And just think of, what if the Golden Gate had not been put in a trust when the military left? It'd be fully developed. Right now, it's a nice mix of where it is right now. And so there are these decisions that happen early on around land use, your protection and management, that if you don't do those, then it's really hard to reverse. And so this group I'm working with now on their board, Sonoma Ecology Center, is all about that.
Also. I'm going to ask you a kind of a hard... It's a philosophical question about the future. You and I both talk about AI a lot. That, I think that's how we met. And that's how we met, and all of our gadgets, our watches, and our stuff. But as you said that, and I'm thinking about, I moved here from Tennessee 12 years ago. And Tennessee is rural, largely. But I moved to California, and there are so many expanses of beautiful land because people made moves 50 years ago to protect those spaces.
It's the West.
We made a lot of good decisions that allow us to drive down 280 from San Jose to San Francisco. And there's just beautiful rolling hills for the majority of it.
Yes.
But that was intentional design 50 years ago, investment, commitment, but working to preserve and protect
those things.
With AI, what do you think we need to preserve and protect for the future of your grandchildren?
Oh, my goodness.
I told you a hard question, but it's word pops in my. I think that kind of longer term thinking is missing, because we're all in such a hurry developing with this new tech for seed and more, and we are not taking as much time as I think we will be, and as we settle into this, and looking at how to protect the future with this technology.
So mind
as,
a,
you, as an
if,
enabler.
As I answer this, I'm also very cognizant of the fact that when I grew up, I used paper maps. And now I use Google Maps and GPS satellites. I don't feel I've lost anything huge. I grew up using slide rules, and now I use calculators. Or frankly, I just ask my phone, ask ChatGPT. Again, that's something that, so I know that change happens, totally fine with that. What I'm really concerned about, though, is the interpersonal communications, the interpersonal experiences. I think the pandemic exacerbated my concerns there, because people got accustomed to being by themselves.
Yes.
And a little nervous about being with other people, and losing a little of work from home also. Using a little bit of the... So I worry about that. And I've been playing around with the ChatGPT 4.0 and interacting with it as a person. Sitting out on the coast today, and I figured, I got my AirPods in, and I'll just start chatting with it and asking questions about, hey, I'm done with my term. I'm feeling a little... I don't know, missing something, not sure what it was. Phenomenal conversation with my AI in my head. Not in my head, you know, my voice in my ears. Right there on the beach. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I should be talking to a real person about this.
Oh.
Yes. And I do. And I do. But 2 years ago, I never would have had that opportunity to have that discussion with, quote unquote, my AI.
Yeah.
And so I worry where that might lead us, because it will come to a point where I or my kids feel more comfortable. Actually, I would say feel less comfortable talking to people than they do to their AI about something that's personal to them. I don't think they should talk. We should talk to all of our friends about things that are personal. That said, I worry about that, because it's so easy. And my AI knows me. Doesn't forget anything
I
told it.
That's right. And your
and
AI
so I
is
speak
on.
Up the conversation. It's not, remember when I told you? Yeah.
But your AI, 24/7 available to you.
Yes.
5 a.m. when you're starting out on a birding walk.
Yes.
It's available to you. Laverne is still snuggled in and sleeping hard.
Yes.
I think for those of us who don't want to be a burden on others, depth is hard to come by these days.
I know.
Right? I know. That's why I love coming to these rallies, because I've got a handful of you that I can.
So I'm an introvert. I think you are too, a little bit. Maybe I don't know. I love being by myself. And I realize that this helps me get me out of myself. Mm-hmm. It's nice. I worry that even me, I can easily see myself directing a lot more personal attention into an AI conversation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know why. I don't know where that's going. But people worried about, again, a whole bunch of things years ago. People were driving cars. You know, where's that going to go? Oh, I'm not driving stick shifts anymore. Mm-hmm. Who drives a stick shift anymore? I totally get that change happens. But this one feels a bit different. I'm talking about this displacement or changing of jobs.
Right. That's a whole different thing.
Understand that.
We could do two more podcasts on that.
Yeah. So I get all that. Right. So
I am an optimist most of the time. And I think we've had some semblances of snippets of conversations. I think people are going to create more community
with AI. Or
the changes AI will shift in us. Humans are seeking more connection. Yes, more people are hiding at home, hiding behind the Zoom.
What makes you think people are looking for more connection?
Because I experience it in the groups of Bay Area-based tech community people are not going into the office anymore.
Yeah.
And they're creating things. Like next weekend, I'm going to be at a thing called The Decelerator. 40 unrelated people. They're not used to that would be a company retreat.
Yes.
And you go bond as a team.
Yes.
Now you've got people independently finding each other and saying, let's invite more and more. And those communities grow. And if you look at the individuals, they have nothing connecting them except maybe a technical interest thread. And they're getting together and they're picking things out of the garden and doing yoga in a barn. There's more and more of that because I think people are seeking it out. I think there are plenty of people that are afraid to be out publicly because now they don't have to. They don't have to go into the office 5 days a week. And so they're like, I can stay home in my yoga pants. Nobody will know if I didn't have a shower.
Yeah.
It's a convenience. But more and more people I see are seeking. A friend of mine wrote about on LinkedIn that he took an Uber ride or a Lyft ride. And the guy driving the Lyft was a software engineer. And this friend of mine, he's a VC, and he said, software engineers in the Bay Area do pretty well financially. Why is this guy picking up rides? And so he asked the guy.
Sure.
He said, what are you doing? He said, what are you doing driving a Lyft? And the guy says, I'm single. I live alone in my apartment. And he said, so I pick up shifts one or two nights a week because I just want to be around other people.
I met a lady doing an airport shuttle. That said exactly the same thing a few months ago.
He's choosing it. He's not doing it really for income.
She says, I'd like talking to people.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And to plug technology, these technologies like Lyft, like ride sharing to apps, that's technology, is enabling people. He's not stuck at home alone since he's not in a coupled situation or whatever. He has other opportunities now that's not going and sitting at a bar. Because some people that are less introverted or whatever, he can choose these channels that have been enabled by technology.
I agree. I just don't know where it's going. But I'm optimistic. I remember my mom used to tell me that when she was young, there was a big thing about getting a phone in the house. That it was dangerous. Yeah.
I haven't heard this one.
Once you have phones in your house, you won't go talk to your neighbors anymore. What does that sound like?
Interesting.
And interesting. This was years ago, of course, passed away now. And of course, it changed some things because kids would go in the room with their phone, the long cable, and they'd talk with their friends instead of going to their friends' houses. Sure, it changes things. So I guess I am going to be
curious,
optimistic.
And curious.
Yeah.
And
I do have to say, though, from a technology standpoint, as you and your listeners know, it is really amazing from an office productivity standpoint. Again, on the bank I'm on and the board, we're starting to use it now in a way that allows us to not really stay down at the lower level of data manipulation.
You can see things so much more broadly.
Totally. You can ask it about this. We think about any odd things you're seeing in this data set or trend. What is, as long as the data is accurate and that's a separate issue, which we know about how to manage. Mm-hmm. It is amazing.
It is. Because we're out of the tactical
That's right.
straightening up the data and we're into really assessing what the data means.
I was talking to, I don't want to say too much about Airstream, but I was talking to an Airstream dealer a couple weeks ago. And we were talking about AI, and I was sharing with him some of the things that we've been doing in my other areas. Oh my gosh. He says, I really want to know more about my customers. I said, so what data sets do you have? He goes, what data sets? I said, okay, what information? Oh, I know when people come in and out of the dealership. So he knows, so he has access to, he says, I was wondering on rainy days versus sunny days, do I have different amounts of traffic flow or not? And do people buy more likely after rainy days or not? So guess what? You can see if there's a correlation. Mm-hmm. I'm like 6-8 years of data. I said, yeah. I said, you may not in your head know if it was raining or not. Guess what? You can get that data set, your AI to
pretty easily.
Say,
yeah.
Do a comparison. Do you see any? He goes, oh my gosh.
And then tune his business.
That's right. I said, you would have had to hire a data analyst in the past to do that. And he goes, yeah, I spent all my time working on spreadsheets. I said, you don't have to do it that way anymore. And he left it inspired. So I do think something like that.
Because he can serve better now.
Yeah, that's right.
Not just sell more Airstreams, but actually he's thinking about how to move his business forward to help more people live this lifestyle.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And again, he's a general manager, so he's wants to be working up at this level, but he's forced to now to work at these. He's got 4 or 5 data sets from these different programs. He can't combine the data. So wonder you can combine it now. You don't have to do a data lake like you used to in the old days. AI. Here's 5 data sets, blah, blah, blah. So I find that very interesting. And I really hope that, I'm not going to call it simplistic operational efficiency, but it's, I hope that people practically use that.
It's not simplistic because we've not done it before.
No, but in terms of what AI can do, it's really far down.
The technology's capacity to handle it is very simplistic.
Yeah.
But I think that people, courage is the word that comes to mind. They're just not comfortable enough yet to step into it. Or inspired.
I gave him the very real example. I said, I can see that.
Yes.
And he knows now he can get started on it. Right? I should check with him later to see if he did it. But I know he got it.
Maybe you and I could productize it.
There you go.
Like, I wanted to be like, yo, stop talking. Stop talking. Let's build it. That wouldn't be fun.
So for our observer, did a little analysis. We use a ticketing software. So we know when people book tickets to come to events. We have about 100 events a year. But we also know the sunrise and sunset times. And because we're an observatory, in the wintertime, the sunset's a lot earlier than it does in the summertime. Right. And I was curious, is there a correlation between the number of people that come to our events when it starts at 10 o'clock or when it starts at 7 o'clock? The answer is no correlation.
Interesting.
It's not.
I wonder what patterns in society drive that to not be a change. Yeah, well, I'm surprised by that.
But so this is, which I love about this, is that I've told the board this, and it starts all these discussions. I wonder what it is. Is it, maybe it's just the temperature out. It could be too, because it's warmer in the summertime.
That's right.
It's cold awareness. So it could be that, or it could be kids are out of school. And so tomorrow isn't a work day or is different if you're a kid, a whole bunch of things. Mm-hmm. We need to know that so we can predict what our oversell amount should be, because we typically try to limit it, right? Mm-hmm. Try to predict how it's a beetle. So anyway, there's all these things that we can do that we never really could talk about before. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that ability.
It wasn't even possible to have a reasonable conversation about it. Now what I love, because you and I are in a lot of conversations with people worried that the humanity is leaking away with AI. But this is, to me, another example of how AI gives us a platform through that data.
It does.
To then have dialogue, because before it wouldn't be worth having the conversation because it wouldn't be based on anything.
That's right.
Now we can spar with what we do know.
Yeah.
And it leads to more well-developed conversations.
That's right.
Because we have a starting point. Yeah. So I love it. Good. I want to do this for another 2 hours.
Bye.
We're coming into the last segment, which to me is fun. It's all fun, but it's my lightning round.
Oh my God.
So I do a lightning round of speed questions that I think about ahead of time.
I got the
Don't cheat. Fast answers. So you introduced me to birding a year ago in Tahoe.
I did.
And you told me this weekend that you didn't think I'd be patient enough to enjoy it, which was pretty funny. But you and Chris took me birding.
I didn't realize
really
you were competitive enough to get into it. I got that.
You introduced me to birding, got all the apps now, have fun with it. But for you, you're also an avid mountain biker.
Yes.
Avid.
Definitely.
Birding or biking, which puts you in flow?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Exercise, outdoors, think, concentrate. Work and bike. If you don't concentrate, you're on the ground.
But concentration, people like us need to be fixed.
Seriously, you're like in the moment. I'm going down this. I got to worry about the next 20 yards right now.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's it.
Good. Love it. Back to birding. That was a great answer for birding or biking. But birding, what is the one bird species that still gets you excited anytime you see it out in the wild?
Oh, actually, waterfowl, actually. Pintail ducks. Yeah.
Okay.
They're beautiful.
That's your thing, so that's good.
Yes.
Back to Airstreams. What's the best piece of advice you would give to someone trying to buy their first Airstream?
Buy a size up for what you think. It's like in a boat. Because you're probably going to want
it. I'm never giving Bella up. She's perfect. I'm not doing. But buy a size up.
Yes. Yes.
She's good.
Yes.
Okay.
If you order, think of 23, get a 25. Think in 25, get a 27.
Okay. I would say that's good advice based on the number of people who moved up just within a year or two of buying their first one.
And the idea is that you're going to love it. You're probably going to, if you love it, you'd probably go out more than you thought you would. Mm-hmm. Unlock the comfort of home with the outdoor. Mm-hmm. There's places we typically would have gone to hotels. What you told the Airstream there? People are like, why aren't you going to hotels? Like, why would I? You got everything stuff here. Mm-hmm. It's lovely.
Yeah.
So ostensibly, use it more. Mm-hmm. And then often we use it more to bring people along. Maybe they just want a little more. Don't go too big.
No, Bella's my one and only. Right. I'm pageant princess. Right.
Laura and Bella, and Bella's listening.
So if you could, now you go on long trips, because you go to the East Coast, you swing through the South. If you could only pack three things for a month-long adventure.
Toys or like essential clothing?
I didn't say three things. Your heated vest, is that one of them? Three things.
That's a really good question. But I would pack my two.
Your deserted island.
My beanie.
List. Okay.
Because they had her hair.
Two?
In Canada, they call them toques.
Oh, so you did get some value. A leader in Canada.
I know you did. A toque. Because my hair gets cold. I'm outdoor all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. I bring a pair of hiking shoes. I love Ultras.
ALTRA.
Yeah, yeah. They're trail running shoes. Mm-hmm. They're great because I do stuff outdoors all the time. I would bring a knapsack. Basically, I'm outdoors.
Man, you are practical.
Sure.
I want my AeroPress. You're an AeroPress fan, right?
I am.
Yeah.
One at home, one in the trailer.
But a hat to keep your head from being cold is probably more critical than... Okay, fine.
Thus.
What's the most...
I feel like you weren't as happy with those answers.
They were very practical.
I'm an engineer. Practical.
You... He's wearing a heated vest. Like, he can change the...
Ron, bring my heated vest and my AeroPress.
You introduce me to apps, which is a rare thing for a friend of mine. You have toys. That's why I love you so much, because we share gadget stories. So.
Yes.
So it was a very vanilla answer, given all the things that you could have said. All right.
Totally.
So what's the most unexpected place that your Airstream has taken you?
Black Rock Flyer.
Tell us more about that.
Where Burning Man is.
Oh. Yeah. You took your Airstream to Burning Man?
Not to Burning Man. So there's a rocket launching event.
Okay.
That happens 2 weeks after Burning.
Okay.
And it's up in the Black Rock Playa. It's a little bit east. It's probably about a mile east, 2 miles east of where the man is burning.
Okay.
And so when we get there, they're still cleaning up after Burning Man. And they call them afterburners or that. People stay around after.
Yeah.
And so we have a rocket launching con, go and observe. And you're just sitting on the playa, like, up, I'm on the middle of this playa. I know the earth curves. I totally understand that. But when I look out there, all I see is it just dives into nothing. I can't even see the edge of the playa because it's that far out and it's curving over and it's dead flat.
Yeah.
That's a magical place.
Yeah.
And you look around and if I started walking that way, I'd have to walk for... Good Lord, I don't know how many hours before I bump into anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most magical place it's been.
I love
unexpected.
It. Just as a sidebar, how long did it take to get the silt out of your
system? We think of it, it's all about positioning.
Please, frame it for me.
Annual cleaning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. We'll talk about that offline because I'm very curious what that process looks like.
A couple days.
Okay, that's not bad. Now
it's annual cleaning.
Okay. Yeah,
Bella deserves it.
Yeah, Bella does deserve.
She would love to be in that life.
But
I'll keep you posted next time.
I'll never forget the picture I saw of an Airstream buried up to its axle.
Yeah.
When they had the rainstorms a couple of years ago. Yeah, and that's kind of stuck with me. Okay, fine. Nothing.
Adventure.
That's right. That's right. Which leads me to, actually, I got one more question.
You look
than that
pictures
one.
Of Airstreams back in the 50s.
Oh, my God. With Wally Bynum crossing rivers in Africa.
With machetes hacking out trails.
With a station wagon. We fight about these big monster trucks that you have to have this major engine to pull these things. I don't have an SUV. But Wally pulled them with essentially a station wagon. And they were huge and heavy and not optimized like today's materials are. It was amazing.
You had warm a knapsack and some boots here. All you need.
Wisdom of the ages. What's one outdoor skill you wish you had learned earlier in life?
Wow. I've always thought I should have scuba dived. I never did.
That's the
one thing. No, but you don't need to know how to swim to scuba dive, I've been told. Over and over.
I understand that. So you're right.
So the world is closed to me. And it's a large part of the world, isn't it, right? Mm-hmm. I would love to. Mm-hmm. Maybe just in nature, mm-hmm. what's happening to our reefs and just our, in California, the whole thing with the mussels and stuff. With the sea urchins and stuff. Mm-hmm. Losing. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be able just to dive and be there with the animals underwater.
Okay. So if you had it to do over and invested time and learning a new skill.
That diving class that a number of friends have asked me to do over the years, I always said,
You are more fit than most 30-year-olds that I know. My point is it's not too late for you to go to that scuba diving class.
I know.
And I didn't mean to lecture you in this conversation, but I have to wag my finger and be like, my friend, if that's something you want, that is completely achievable.
I understand that.
But there are priorities.
There's only sort of much time in the life. Time wasn't in the day.
Yep. I forgot what I got all excited about a minute ago and said it's the last question. But what's the big adventure that is still on your bucket list?
I've never been to Alaska.
I know. You're kidding me.
Every flipping elsewhere and never to Alaska.
You've been everywhere else three times.
But I have a dream trip to Alaska. So I'm a hunter also. So I want to be flown in to one of those remote islands, dropped and hunt and fish and have someone come pick me up later. That's what
and the introvert in you want to hunt and fish on essentially private land.
Public.
Public land.
Yeah.
But you want to not be in an entourage of people.
I probably have one person go with me or two. I really know. Way back in the middle of there. And by hunting, because that means you don't get anything, but you're just in a place that's just as remote as you can be with a purpose in mind, right? Mm-hmm. And some gorgeous, but I've never been up there. So that's one of my adventures.
Is that something you're going to work on now that you'll spend less time traveling the U.S., continental U.S.?
Yes.
I love it.
Definitely.
I love it.
And what about you? Your one adventure that you haven't yet achieved. Because you've been everywhere as well. Go on, flash question.
My adventures involve shopping.
Go ahead.
So it's landing in Beijing with nothing but a toothbrush and my laptop and going to the silk market and buying everything I need for the week, from the piece of luggage to the things that I'll wear to just show up. And that's a very risky.
And are you working on that to make that happen?
Not right now. China's not in my radar now. It's when I was going a lot, I said, wouldn't it be great to come over once and do that? So I think something like that would be my adventure. It wouldn't be a physically risky external adventure like you in nature. It would be more
adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something I talked about doing and I would still like to have a way to do.
You're young. You can still do it.
Okay. So looking ahead as we close, what's the title of your next chapter?
It's local, for sure.
That's it. Local.
It's local. That's where I want to spend my time and energy.
Beautiful. If you want to leave people with information about you, about the causes that are important to you, about how to look into Airstreams. What's the piece of like connection information you would provide to our audience?
I would, because it's we're in an Airstream, I just have to say airstreamclub.org. And I don't ascribe to the belief that people have to only travel to our events.
Yeah.
I think it should be a part of one's outdoor experiences.
This is a good question for me to ask you. I'm going to extend this by a minute. But I think there are a lot of people, because Airstreams aren't inexpensive. It's a lot of people. It's a long, protracted decision-making process.
For sure.
How can, because you probably know this better than anybody, how can you get involved to test the waters on Airstream life, the community, all those things, before you feel like you have to own an Airstream?
Because I think you can.
Okay.
We thought about it a lot. I don't think you can. Okay. Because our events are 2, 3, 4 days long, and they're for members. And so you have to have an Airstream. We invite people to come in and visit sometimes, but it's just not the same. So I would say if you're interested in the outdoors, it's a lovely experience to be in. Get an Airstream, get a used one, get a new one, rebuild a vintage one, start traveling, come to a vendor and see if you like it. If you love it, then, you know, it may be in your future to do long term.
The people that you met at dinner tonight when you stopped by, they came to one of our club rallies in a, we call them SOBs. What is that? Okay. But it's an acronym that's pleasant.
It stands for some other brand.
Some other brand. Thank you.
But my old hat is Airstream Club President. The death of our club is to be viewed as elitist.
Thank you. I love it.
Yeah.
But they came in, not some other brand that they owned. They did a rental. They did a rental of a very different kind of RV. But they had friends that were in the club. So they came, camped like right next to our group. And they went through everybody's trailer. And that's because they knew they wanted to lean in that direction. But he's an architect. So they're planners. And they looked in my closets. They looked in my cabinets.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they were trying to make decisions like 23 versus 27. Some of the frames or the form factors are different. And so they came and they explored by doing a...
That's a fantastic job because you get to see a bunch of, in this case, like 40 Airstreams here. Every single one of us come inside and take a look around. Yeah. Every single one of us.
Yeah. And see my mess. See what's in that closet. And there is an openness that is really remarkable that you don't see anywhere else.
You and I talked earlier about this concept of going inside people's homes. How that's a more intimate experience.
Community
with
creation,
people to fit here. The fact that you're fine me coming in and looking at whatever's around here, it's just, it's magical. You don't really do that. A lot of people don't do it enough at home anymore.
Yeah,
I agree. Come to that, come look at the rigs, see if you meet some people, and come to another event and whatever. See what happens.
I'm going to sit with you in a year before then, but on this podcast, I'm going to sit with you in a year.
I'll be in Alaska.
And you'll be in Alaska. And I have to come. I will come to Alaska with my set of preformed questions.
All right. I'll meet you in Beijing.
We could do that. We could do that. But I will come see you and we will see what is happening in your next chapter. Because I am excited. I adore your energy and the way you build community and the way you inclusively fold in people who are so different from each other and turn them into resources.
Thank you.
And so I'm excited about what the next year will bring for you, because I think the next year is your transition timing to decide where your energy goes and your tremendous skill and talent.
This is about transitions, and pretty much every transition I've had, it's come at a time where I knew exactly what I wanted to do. The time was right. And I've thought about it quite a bit too, but what I want to do next. I knew I wanted to focus local years ago at this point in my life.
But you don't have an agenda. You're not winding down this because you're going to run for mayor of Santa Rosa. You see what I'm saying? You don't have an agenda. So the next year for you will evolve into where is the place that you can make the most impact?
Sure. For sure. Thank you so much.
So the impact that Eric and I are going to go make now is next door. I'm hoping these noise canceling microphones. Our friends are waiting for us with chocolate and wine.
They're drinking.
I'll have a double helping of chocolate since I don't drink.
I can't tell you how many Zoom or Teams meetings I've been on while traveling and having people outside partying, knocking on the window saying, are you done?
They've been quite good to us. But it is getting a little louder over there. And so we shall go. But It has been remarkable. I have loved this. Thank you. Indeed. Thank you. Everyone from Reset with Tanya, Half Moon Bay edition with Eric McHenry. Next chapter.
Mwah. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Reset. You've been listening to our show from KPCR LP 92.9 FM in Los Gatos and KMRT LP 101.9 FM in Santa Cruz. Remember, transformation is a journey, not a destination. Until next time, keep exploring what's possible. I'm Tanya Long, and this is home. This is Reset.